Got something on your mind? Tell Lisa all about it. 203-333-9422. It's the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
So I told Carl nobody, no matter how famous their parents are, nobody is allowed to climb on the dinosaur. But of course, this went right in one ear.
I love how he cares so much about stuff. If I squint, I can pretend he's Alan Alda.
Joining us now is the world-renowned paleontologist Nizar Ibrahim from National Geographic and elsewhere, because today is International Dinosaur Day, and who among us has not gone through at least one phase of our lives where we have been absolutely fascinated with dinosaurs? Then for some people, we move on. Others, like Ross from Friends, never moved on, and so he becomes the paleontologist that bores everybody. But our next guest for sure is not going to bore anybody. Dr. Ibrahim, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Good morning.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's fun to have you on because it's fun to talk about something other than sad things in the news. And of course, today is International Dinosaur Day. So you have to tell us, Dr. Ibrahim, I want to know, first of all, from you, why did the fascination with dinosaurs stick to the point where you wanted to make it your career and life's work?
Well, it all started with a book. I got a book on dinosaurs and other extinct animals when I was 4 or 5 years old. And I was hooked, you know. On the pages of that book, I discovered an entire lost world of incredible creatures. And, you know, I decided there and then that I would become a paleontologist.
So, and as you became a paleontologist and in your life as a paleontologist, let's say the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, is there still a lot that we can find out about dinosaurs, or do we already know mostly everything we're ever going to know?
That's a really good question. And I think many kids kind of think that, you know, all the cool dinosaurs have already been found, but nothing could be further from the truth. We have only discovered a fraction of all the dinosaurs that can be discovered, and we're really just scratching the surface. We're finding dinosaurs at an unprecedented rate at the moment. Sometimes a new dinosaur, a new type of dinosaur is found every week, but there's still so much left to discover. And, you know, one of the reasons why I do a lot of fieldwork in Africa, for example, is that we know very little about Africa's age of dinosaurs. Most of the famous dinosaurs like T-Rex and Stegosaurus and Triceratops are from North America. But there are huge parts of the world that are severely underexplored, including Africa. So there's still a lot out there to be uncovered.
That's amazing. You're saying that you discover a new dinosaur every week. So why don't you explain to us, give us a sense, those of us who are ignorant, I'll raise my hand first. When did dinosaurs live and walk on the Earth? Like when, in terms of our relationship to how many years ago that we believe it was from ago? When did they live?
Well, the dinosaurs, as many of you probably know, went extinct at the end of the Cretaceous, which was about 66 million years ago. But they first appeared about 240 million years ago. So they were around for a very, very long time, about 180 million years. So it was really one of nature's greatest success stories. It's something that we humans will never match for sure. So dinosaurs were around for a very long time, and they lived on an evolving planet, you know, with moving continents and sea level changes and fluctuations in climate and volcanism on a scale we cannot even begin to imagine. So they were incredibly successful and adaptable. And you know how sometimes we use the word dinosaur to describe the opposite of adaptable. You know, we kind of
right.
use the word dinosaur to describe things that are, you know, old fashioned or, you know, I don't know, a politician that can't adapt to new realities. But nothing could be further from the truth. Dinosaurs were incredibly adaptable. And mammals were around. You know, our own little furry ancestors lived literally in the shadows of the dinosaurs for this very long time, and they only got their lucky break when most of the dinosaurs went extinct at the end of the Cretaceous.
So we're chatting with Dr. Ibrahim, who's a famed paleontologist. Let me understand something. So these dinosaurs walked the Earth for 180 million years. They walk the earth with plants, which are other living things. What other living things were around during the time that there were dinosaurs? Were there fish? Was there anything? Were frogs around? I mean, what else was around? Was there anything that survived that we could recognize that also lived during the age of dinosaurs?
Yeah, there are, you know, things like lungfish, for example, or coelacanths were around in the time of the dinosaurs. If you travel back in time, you would see relatives of some modern living animals, like snakes. Although some of those snakes actually had little legs, you know, that kind of goes all the way back to the original snakes.
Snakes with legs. Yeah. Oi, oi. Okay.
Yeah. You would see, of course, a bunch of you know, insects that look vaguely familiar. But then there would be many other things that look very unfamiliar. You know, you would essentially would be like traveling to an alien world. You would see these giant flying reptiles, the pterosaurs, which we sometimes also refer to as pterodactyls, you know, these big flying reptiles. And, of course, the dinosaurs themselves. The oceans would be ruled by marine reptiles. You would see some marine reptiles that look similar to modern ones, like sea turtles, for example, and others that look completely different. So you would have this mixture of really alien-looking creatures and some animal groups that look more familiar.
And do we know, the theory that I've always heard, Dr. Ibrahim, is that an asteroid hit the Earth and caused such massive disruption to the climate of the planet that it caused an immediate mass extinction of all dinosaurs. Have we proven that? Do we know that to be true?
Yes, we know that an asteroid struck our planet at the end of the Cretaceous. We even found the smoking gun, if you like, in the form of a crater off the coast of Mexico in the Yucatan Peninsula. So we know that that was a devastating event. And, you know, it's very difficult to convey to people just how violent this event would have been. It would have been like, you know, worse than detonating all of our nuclear bombs all at once. And, you know, that was, of course, triggered a mass extinction, and many animals went extinct. The survivors were all small animals that could, you know, burrow underground or, you know, hide from the catastrophic consequences of the impact. But we know that some other factors may have contributed. We know that there was a lot of volcanism at the time. There were some fluctuations in climate and sea levels. But the asteroid really was the main factor. But I should add that not all dinosaurs went extinct. We know that one branch of the dinosaur tree made it through the extinction event, and those are the animals we now call birds. We know that birds are dinosaurs. They're not just related to dinosaurs. They are dinosaurs. We know that many dinosaurs, in fact, had feathers. Feathers initially evolved not for flight, but for insulation to keep the animals warm, maybe also for display, like the tail feathers in a peacock. And so in that regard, dinosaurs are still around us. There are more bird species than mammal species around today. So the age of dinosaurs has not really ended.
You have to explain to me, as a scientist, as a paleontologist, how you say and why you say a bird is a dinosaur. Are you talking about the DNA, the skeleton? Explain to me. I thought a bird was a bird and a dinosaur was a dinosaur.
Well, you know, these definitions we have are sometimes a little, misleading. We know that dinosaurs are reptiles. But really, strictly speaking, reptiles, you know, includes birds. And that's also one of the reasons why you see scales on the feet of a chicken, for example, or other birds. We can look at a key set of features that define birds, right? And we find these features in dinosaurs. And so we can no longer differentiate the two. You know, dinosaurs have things like a wishbone, for example. They have the same bone structure. They even had a bird type breathing system. And so now that we found these feathered dinosaurs, so even the quintessential bird feature, feathers, first appeared in dinosaurs, we suddenly, you know, we can bridge that gap and we can show that, you know, the first birds are the direct descendants of small predatory dinosaurs, which already had feathers and many other bird features. And You know, so we can trace the evolutionary history of birds all the way back to these feathered dinosaurs. And that's, you know, that was one of the big revolutionary moments in paleontology when we realized that not all dinosaurs had gone extinct. You know, they're still all around us.
We're chatting with Dr. Nizar Ibrahim of National Geographic, and we're talking about the fact that today is International Dinosaur Day. What do we know, if anything, Dr. Ibrahim, what does your science tell you about the worlds of dinosaurs in terms of creatures? Were they sentient beings, the way we think of elephants, for example, and gorillas and dogs? You know, what do we know anything about their communities, whether they had mothering instincts? Do we know anything about the way they functioned in terms of their own family systems?
Yeah, we do. Some of the evidence is very direct evidence. We find dinosaur tracks, for example. So we know that some dinosaurs moved and lived in herds. We also know that some of them were sitting on their eggs, just like birds. We found some dinosaurs that were actually preserved, sitting on their eggs. They died very suddenly. Maybe they were caught in a sandstorm or under a collapsing sand dune. So we have a mother dinosaur sitting on a clutch of eggs, protecting the eggs with the feathers.
Wow.
And so we have some direct evidence. We can also look at the basic architecture of a dinosaur brain. The brain itself rots away, but the opening in the skull where the brain used to sit is still there. So we know what shape the brain was. And we can then look at the size of different parts of the brain, like the part of the brain that's important for vision or smell or information processing. And so some dinosaurs had good sized brains. They were absolutely sentient beings in the same way that animals today are. Humans often like to kind of carve out a special place for humans. And, you know, even amongst living animals, we sometimes think, oh, you know, this particular creature doesn't, you know, really feel pain or whatever. But of course, you know, scientifically speaking, that's not true. You know, all of these animals, including the dinosaurs, would have been sentient beings with complex lives. And, you know, some of them, yes, absolutely living in herds. Maybe some of them were pack hunters. So, many of the things we see in living animals would also have seen in the dinosaurs.
And I know, I just remember this from eighth grade science, some of them ate plants, some of them ate everything, some of them were more aggressive than others, right? So very much like if you look at the makeup of animals today on planet Earth, different categories of different habits, depending upon their breed, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. There are predatory dinosaurs, you know, there are specialized fish-eating dinosaurs, plant-eating dinosaurs, you name it. Dinosaurs played all of those important ecological roles that are now played by, you know, big mammals like elephants and rhinos or predatory mammals like lions.
What do you think, Dr. Ibrahim, if it would be possible to recreate from DNA, from long-buried DNA, would you want scientists to try and put flesh and life into a dinosaur based on what they could do today, like embryonic? You know what I mean? Like they're talking about starting a woolly mammoth and whatever. Would you want to see that, Dr. Ibrahim?
Well, obviously, from a personal point of view, I would love to see a living dinosaur. But I think that when we talk about the woolly mammoth, for example, I think there are some ethical concerns. Should we bring these extinct animals back? You know, they lived in a very different kind of world. And I don't know what kind of life they would have in our modern world, but you know it is not going to be possible anytime soon, and maybe never, because ancient DNA, when you're talking about things like T-Rex or Triceratops, falls apart pretty dramatically. So the best we can hope for are tiny little fragments of DNA, but that's not enough to resurrect the dinosaur. It would be like finding a few letters or a few words from a big book and trying to reconstruct the entire book. So we're not.
It's
really
probably
in a
just as well
in science.
It's probably just as well.
Yeah,
we would end up caging the poor creature and giving that creature a very unhappy life.
Well, that's the thing. We're not doing a very good job looking after the animals that are alive today. We've already driven most of them to the brink of extinction. So I think, you know, we should probably focus on making sure we don't cause the extinction of many animals alive today. That's probably a bigger priority.
Dr. Ibrahim, just one more question. I'm delighted to chat with you. It's Dinomania. We're talking about dinosaurs on International Dinosaur Day. What's the most thrilling discovery that you've ever made as a paleontologist?
Well, we uncovered a very strange crocodile-snouted sail-backed dinosaur. And that was probably the most thrilling discovery we made, because this dinosaur was a river monster. It was a water-loving dinosaur. It was hunting fish. And so it was doing something that we thought dinosaurs never did, which is, you know, invade the aquatic world. So because that discovery really kind of rewrote the textbooks, it ranks as one of my most thrilling discoveries for sure.
Where did you discover it?
We found it in the Sahara Desert, and it's hard to believe, because now when we look at the Sahara, it's a very dry and inhospitable place. But 100 million years ago, when Spinosaurus was alive, this place was home to a huge river system, and it was teeming with life. And, you know, it was home to these giant SUV-sized fish and crocodile-like hunters and this fish-eating dinosaur, Spinosaurus. So it would have been a very different kind of place. But that discovery also gives you a really good sense of what we call deep time, geological time, where you really understand how our planet changes pretty dramatically over time.
We're just really specks in the universe, aren't we, Doctor? We're not even a blink of an eye. We're just here for...
We are. I mean, I like to say that, yeah. You know, astronomy kind of teaches us how small we are in space, right? Because we realize how small our planet is in the bigger picture. And I guess paleontology shows us how small we are in time. And this tiny little slice of time that we call the present really is, as you said, just a little speck.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for your insight, your discovery, your passion, your curiosity. We so much appreciate your sharing your world of knowledge with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Dr. Nizar Ibrahim from National Geographic on dinosaurs. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.